Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the middle of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. We call it conversation radio. Radio considerably unlike anything else you're likely to hear for a variety of reasons. Here in the hills of almost level West Bicod, Virginia, it is a little bit drizzly and drippy. But it's warmly drizzly and drippy. It's very much spring-like. And we do, in fact, find ourselves at midweek. It is Wednesday. Hump day. Downhill to Friday. Well, Thursday, too, for that matter. Let me check. Yeah, it's still Wednesday. Okay. Sometimes I get ahead of myself. And it's just... After having been on the road so much over the course of the last month, which probably accounts for the fundraising problems we had last month, it's just good to be back in the chair for a night, and then another night, and then another night, and then tomorrow. Right, exactly. It's just nice. And... Trying to get things in order here to get going. A little reminder, first and foremost. Apparently we still have issues with the PayPal button, which means that makes it a little more complicated for you to contribute to the Horn when you wish to. But it's easily remedied. All you have to do is log into your PayPal account and then choose the send money option, and for the address, use Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, then select personal and gift, and that way none of your funds are eaten up in transfer fees. Okay? So just make that clear. We had an email earlier this evening. I got an internet yesterday. We had a note earlier this evening from our good friend Tamara out in San Diego. She said, not much, but I just dropped $20 in the U.S. mail. Hope it helps. It does. And she notes, check made out to the Horn. Should arrive by the weekend. And that's important because if you choose to use snail mail, it is important that the checks be made out to Head On Communications, The Horn, something like that, not Bob Kincaid, because that creates problems down to the credit union. So I thought you'd necessarily want to know that. But yeah, thank you, Tamara. It helps more than you know. So that's another two slots in the Thrifty 250. Four more having been taken up earlier in the day. Thank you very kindly. We're making some progress. We're catching up again, or at least we're keeping up. And our sincere thanks go out to those of you who make it possible to continue this little experiment, this ongoing experiment in independent, non-corporatized broadcasting. Thank you. By the way, the snail mail address is on the website, but here, if you want to write it down and put it on a refrigerator with a magnet or whatever, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, just like the President, President Eisenhower, not President Drive, North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, W-V, 25801. And everything is appreciated tremendously. Because, you know, we have ongoing bills that have to be paid, and people that periodically have to be told, wait, it's happening, it's going to come on, we've been with you for a long time, just be patient. And then, so you understand. It is Wednesday, it is the middle of the week, and it is prayer meeting Wednesday. And just before we, I will, just give me a minute. But I got to share this with you from Michael, Mike, last night after the show. You may recall a few shows back, I guess what, was it Monday? Or no, it was Friday probably, Friday, when I told you about meeting the Fundies in the hotel there where we were staying while we were doing our work in D.C. And it was weird enough as it was, and you remember me telling you about how, well, I thought, you know, maybe these are some of those, you know, sunlight and butterfly Fundies. And but no, they never are. They never, I hate that Barack Obama. And then finding on their website another lie from the EPA, right? Well, it gets worse. I guess I didn't do all of my homework, but Mike did. Jeebus. So I got this note after the program last night from Mike. It says, Bob, just finished your podcast from 4-3. You forgot to mention this little nugget of Christian identity dogma. Oh, no. From the Stone Kingdom Ministries website under their statement of faith, if you want to go and have a look at it. Quote. No, I'm not going to do this with an accent. Because this is too serious. No funny voices. Quote, we believe that a prayerful study of the Holy Bible and a general knowledge of world history, which is simply God's plan worked out through time. Oh, I said no funny voices. Restart. We believe that a prayerful study of the Holy Bible and a general knowledge of world history, which is, and this is in parentheses, which is simply God's plan worked out through time, close parentheses, provides convincing proof that the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic, Scandinavian, and related peoples, often simply called the Christian nations, close paren, are the true racial descendants of the tribes of Israel. Oh, Margaret. Paren, ample documentation is available for those willing to examine it. Close paren. We believe that prophecy about Israel has been, is being, and will continue to be fulfilled in them. In whom? Wait, okay. Going to have to put that up on a board and diagram it or something. We especially believe that the United States of America and Canada, uniquely fulfill the prophesied place of the regathering of all the tribes of Israel, 2 Samuel 7:10, and many more. Mike says, looks like your buddy Vince... Careful how you throw around that your buddy business, Mike. Looks like your buddy Vince and his bunch are from the Aryan Nations School of Bible Study. No wonder he hates Obama. And he had 7 kids. 7. Quiver babies. Raising them to save the white race from the mongrel people. That's how they talk in their little meetings, you know. I find this absolutely fascinating. World history is God's plan worked out through time. Even when it's histories of people who didn't have particularly anything to do with those Levantine cultures. And Saxon, Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic, Scandinavian, and related peoples are... are you out there, Texas Betsy? This is going to... You might... Are the true racial descendants of the tribes of Israel. See, when you use phrases like true racial descendants of the tribes of Israel, what you're doing is working a little Zieg Heil into your shtick without actually having to say Zieg Heil. Got it? Yeah. That little litany of cultures, Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, Scandinavian. Oh, where is it? No. There it is. I read that little litany. What was it again? Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic, Scandinavian are in related peoples, often called simply the Christian nations, and you can't keep an old disc jockey down. This is immediately where my head went. Come on, slow computer. There it is. Ah.
I didn't know what day it was when you walked in to the room. I said hello, unnoticed. You said goodbye too soon. Breezing through the clientele, spinning yarns that were so lyrical. I really must confess right here, the attraction was purely physical.
Bear with me, you'll figure it out in a minute.
I took all those habits of yours that in the beginning were hard to accept. Your fashion sense, be it lip prints, I put down to experience. The big bosom lady with a Dutch accent who tried to change my point of view. Her ad-lib lines were well rehearsed, but my heart cried out for you. You're in my heart, you're in my soul. You be my breath, should I grow old. You are my lover, you're my best friend. You're in my soul. My love for you is immeasurable. My respect for you immense. You're ageless, timeless, lace and fineness, your beauty and elegance. You're a rhapsody, a comedy, you're a symphony and a play. You're every love song ever written, but honey, what do you see?
I know it's a long way to go to make a small point, but bear with me.
You're the warmest thing. ever found. You're in my heart.
Yeah, Lottie, I love this song, too. But this is more about me than Christian identity, Aryan nations, weirdos, or even Rod Stewart. That one line, your Celtic United, but maybe the best team I've ever seen. That one stupid little word. And it's not stupid vis-a-vis being Celtic or anything. But in their little statement of faith, Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic. This is the curse of having the kind of memory that I have. Or maybe it's the beauty of memory. I don't know. But I saw that one word, Celtic, in that list, and immediately, bing, something happened in my brain. The song played through to the line. I got a complete visual of a very, very young Bob standing at an FM broadcast studio booth at about 2:34 in the morning, because I could see the clock. I could smell the coffee that had been on since I got there at, 11. It's beginning to burn a little bit. And this is why when we hit the classic rock station on the radio, Ferg goes, "Hey, I want to hear that." I go, no, it's already in my head. But lo and behold, there it is. The Christian identity, racial purity movement that has decided that it's the real Jews and everybody else is an imposter. That line? "We believe that the prophecy about Israel has been, is being, and will continue to be fulfilled in them." And I said earlier, we'll have to diagram the sentence, but the "them" is the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic, Scandinavian, and related peoples. I don't know if that includes the Slavs or not. Greeks and Italians, you're out. French, you're kinda in. Spaniards, unless you're Basque, I guess you're out too. Which is really kind of weird, because old Vince was kind of dark and swarthy. Go figure. But that gave me the willies, just ugh. But thanks, Mike, for going and finding that out. You never know who you're hanging out around. Yeah, Ron in Raleigh says, "You made me bite my tongue. These folks..." Sorry, Ron. "These folks have bought into their own self-serving BS. They're a little late to the game. The Mormons have been running that lost tribe horse shit for over a century and a half." Yeah, I know. I remember when Paul McCartney, DJ thing again, recorded a song and caused a little bit of a stir, a little ditty called "Give Ireland Back to the Irish." These neo-Nazis in Abercrombie and Fitch t-shirts cannot see fit to leaving being Jewish to the Jews. It's only a 3,000-year-old tradition or so. Yeah, about 3,000 years. But they can't know. Sorry. Well, we want it. It's like when you're playing Super Friends and everybody wants to be Superman and nobody ever wants to be Aquaman. Right? Yeah. There. Yes, Jim. Early toaster award for Jim. "Memory is a two-edged sword. As it crowns, so it crucifies." And a lovely, A lovely analogy, I might add, Jim, given this particular week. Ray noting Rod Stewart should have gone into exile after the Faces. Now. So that's how I went to sleep, thinking about my near and for all I didn't know. I had no idea. I mean, I walk in, we're getting ready to leave. You know, you could stay for some Bible study, brother. No. Gotta hit the road. I think I hear my mother call. I do believe I've forgotten my fudge. Gotta go now. But I guess I could have expected to hear some Christian identity stuff had I stayed. But it's one of those cold chill kind of moments, really. And this is Wednesday, so that's why the story. It's one of those cold chill kind of moments. Because it is, as you know, I'm the one who says it all the time here on this program. They walk among us. And you don't know. I had no idea that just by being, and we're like this, Southern folk, Appalachian folk, we're kind of neighborly. The guy's window wouldn't stay up because the shock absorber thingies were shot to pieces. And there he was trying to herd and shepherd all these little kids running around and get all his crap out of the back of the car. And I just, here, let me hold that for you. You dig, I'll hold. And he's almost a Klansman. Brrr. I feel icky. But then again, this being Wednesday also, maybe it's worthwhile noting, because Jesus did not invent this, it's probably derivative. He may have introduced it more widely in his circles. But, you know, it was Socrates in the Symposium who said... the highest form of love is to love your enemy. If normal, decent, upstanding human being type people like you and me have anybody that we could pretty much clearly define as an enemy, doesn't it have to be the white supremacists? I mean, wouldn't it be Nazis? Wouldn't it be Klansmen? I mean, can we just clearly say that they're our enemies? That they're enemies of everything that we hold dear about what is left of this once great nation? Because I think we can say that. So I don't know. I'm deeply conflicted. David in Tennessee noting, Steve Marriott sang in front of Faces. Rod Stewart did well in front of Small Faces. That a restructured aggregation of Faces remnants. See, there's so much stuff I get to learn on this program. I guess Small Faces is, I didn't realize it. Because, I've always heard that too, you know, Rod Stewart and Faces. I didn't know it was Small Faces. But that was the beginning of Rod's gig. Yeah, okay. The things you learn. In Australia, Robert, writing, please, under the email subject line heading, one lousy manager. Please, no offense to anyone, but this God bloke is one lousy manager. He creates his chosen people, then goes and creates a whole bunch of not chosen people. Why? Seems to be a really stupid thing to do if he wants it all to go smoothly. And see, that's where you run into the problem. If you actually engage in study, what you find out is the God of the Old Testament is he's like some sort of genetic disorder where he's old and white-headed and got a beard and everything, but he's really just a juvenile delinquent. Just sort of metaphysically reaching down and, you know, popping people on the back of the heads. Any of you who ever went to summer camp may remember a goofy little song that was sung. What was it? Little Bunny Foo Foo. Anybody here? Yeah, because it's just like Romper Room. Little Bunny Foo Foo. Anybody remember Little Bunny Foo Foo? Little Bunny Foo Foo goes hopping through the forest, picking up the field mice and popping them on the head. That's basically Old Testament Jehovah. And the popping on the back, on the head with the little field mice, that's the smiting. So, yes, Justin, you're absolutely right. God does lots of stupid things. Well, we have a... I guess we have a dispute here, Justin noting Rod Stewart was not in small faces, just faces. It'll get sorted out. That's what the interweb tubes are for. But, I wanted to just share that with you, for that observation from Mike, because you don't know. We have no idea. We are clueless. I mean, I got a big giggle out of Ferg while we were in D.C. because, oh, where was it? It was up on Capitol Hill. Some idiot woman's walking along, and every 2.5 seconds, Jesus saves! Jesus saves! Jesus saves! I guess this passes for witnessing. She walks past me and says, Jesus saves! I just turn and say, Moses invests! Just something to break up the monotony of the whole thing. I was hoping she'd come back and say Jesus is coming soon, and I was going to hand him a tissue. They're so annoying. It's as if they know that the First Amendment's there to protect their rights, but this is how it is. They're utterly unwilling to acknowledge that it's protecting anybody else's. I mean, Lord of mercy. I guess this ran around last month in New Mexico. And I know, we've got listeners in New Mexico. Must be interesting. A New Mexico man said he discovered an image of Jesus Christ on a tortilla he was preparing on Ash Wednesday. You know, there's a toaster company out there that will arrange the little element wires so it'll toast Jesus or the teenager Mary. That's what virgin means in the original. Or the teenager Mary, or just about anybody. You want it, just toast it right into your toast there. But no, this happened on a tortilla. Don't blame me. David Sandoval of Espanola said he was shocked to discover the face of Jesus on his food, but he's always been a believer in Christianity. That reported by an Albuquerque, I knew I should have taken a left lane at Albuquerque, an Albuquerque television station. Sandoval continued, not understanding the old axiom that it is better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and confirm it. He said, it became even more astonishing with it being the first day of Lent. This story's a little old. I passed it to my mom, and the same response came from her. Oh, my God. Sandoval said he posted a picture of the image on Facebook, and the response has largely echoed his own. Everybody's been able to see it. They're calling it a miracle. New Mexico has always been known to have interesting things happen during Lent time. It's a scorch mark on a tortilla. And it looks like there's two scorch marks for eyes and then a sort of negative space where that might, and then another scorch mark that's either, and this could either be a happy face or it could be, oh, for heaven's sakes. Now we understand how the Shroud of Turin came into being. iron skillets are amazing things. But when I read the story, Jim sent this along, it's when he follows up, it became even more astonishing with it being the first day of Lent. I passed it to my mom, and the same response came from her. Oh, my God. Never, never, not for one single instant understanding that it was their perception driving the... Oh, but why? Why? It's not like they're not listening. Of course, we are approaching the Easter holiday. And it's every time we get near Easter now, I think of the words of the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Bill Hicks, of course, saying that Easter, we celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ by pretending that bunnies lay chocolate eggs. He said, let's at least be creative. In a little kid voice, Mummy, a goldfish left Lincoln Logs in my sock drawer. Yes, darling, and that's the story of Easter. God, he was brilliant. So it's about this time of year that I start thinking about Lincoln Logs and sock drawers and ambitious goldfish. So on the first day of Lent, and see, this is the problem. The only way that tortilla is Jesus is if Jesus was a white guy. And he just really wasn't. You know, probably about 5 foot nothing, curly hair, beard, never took a razor to his face. And I know it's going to come as a real shock to the Church of Christ and Baptists and everything out there, but when you never even trim your beard, I mean, I've got a beard here, but I trim it. Because if I don't, I rapidly transition to that state that John Fox referred to as Bob Kincaid Viking gone to seed. If you don't trim it, it keeps growing. Just like fingernails and toenails. It keeps growing. And it gets kind of unkempt and ungainly looking and hangy-downy and looks a whole lot more like one of those people that we like to bomb so much in places like Afghanistan than it does the well-coiffed young Apollo Helios sun god the church appropriated for the imagery and iconography of the Son of God. And yes. Marty noting the central question around the New Mexico tortilla guy, but did he eat the taco? See, I'm thinking when you've got a tortilla and it's got the face of Jesus in it, you really can't do a taco. It's more that's more fitting for a quesadilla. And you'd just about have to eat it, wouldn't you? I think you would. Because, I mean, that's the ultimate manifestation of consuming the body of your... Right. Ray, two Roman soldiers at the crucifixion. One of them says, hey, this guy's face is on my pizza. Of course, it being the Easter season, it's always good to recount, and I'm sure many of you saw it growing up, as did I, that truly forgettable film, The Greatest Story Ever Told, with an all-star cast. I mean, Jesus, Robert Mitchum, Gregory Peck, John Wayne, and Max von Sydow as Jesus. But John Wayne is the centurion at the foot of the cross, and it may be apocryphal, but you know, it's Easter, so why not some apocrypha? John Wayne at the foot of the cross. It's one line, it's one take. You know, all right, Duke, that was great. You're out of here, buddy. Where's my check? But it was one line, and it required several takes. The one line was where the Duke, as the centurion, looks up and says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." And cut. Duke, it's one line. You only get one chance to really shine here, Duke. Let's get a second take, all right? No problem. Your time, your check. And action. "Surely this man was the Son of God." Cut. Duke, it's not working for me. Well, what do you want there? What can I do for you? I don't know, Duke. Somehow or another, that's Jesus up there, Duke. That's not Max. That's Jesus. It needs something. I don't know, Duke. Maybe more awe. Yeah, okay. And action. "Ah, surely this man was the Son of God." Cut. It's that time of year. If you're into textual criticism and scripture and everything, you know that everything wasn't recorded. For instance, the Gospel of Thomas records things that aren't necessarily in Matthew, Mark, or Luke, and there's stuff in Luke that's not in Mark, and there's stuff in John that's not in it. Yeah, everything's not up there. And for instance, and as one of the things that's not up there is all of the words that Jesus said on the cross. You know, we have the "Father, into your hands I commend my soul. Father, why have you forsaken me?" But before that all happened, there was that moment when Jesus up on the cross said, Peter! Peter came running to the front. "Yes, Lord! I can see your house from here." Not in the Bible either. Yeah, I don't know why there's been two Gregory Peck references in the last two shows, Ray, but you're right. I'm glad there's somebody out there that keeps count of these things. Marty noting that after playing Jesus, not right after, naturally, Max von Sydow goes on to play Ming the Merciless. There were a few years in between that, right? Michael writing says, an older story. "A pal of mine went back to Wales to visit the old country. Old fellow there saw Jeebus on his wood stove if stove got hot enough, but he didn't have much firewood. The godly bless him, lined up with armloads." Oh. What's a Welsh accent sound like? "Make the Jesus appear." Kind of like me making the smoothie machine work last week. Yeah, we had to go to Charleston today. Agnes had a doctor's appointment, follow-up stuff from the car wreck. Like a dummy, we stopped at the same McDonald's again. More troubles with the smoothie machine, but I refuse to heal it this time. These things just have to run their course. I tried to peep over at the screen for the... because I have a feeling it really does. I have a feeling the cash register screen looks exactly like the cash register in Idiocracy. A correction coming in from my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Ghastly error. It was Marriott in Small Faces, the former. Stewart Fronted Faces, the latter. I flipped the names. Sorry. Memories from that era are, alcohol was involved at the very least. 2 minutes in the penalty box for me. Nah, skate on back out, David. Things will be fine. Wow, how does this happen? So, yeah, just a skinheads, Christian Identity Movement. They walk among us. And that reminds me of something that Jude sent along a couple of nights ago that I wasn't able to get to. We were talking about Christopher Columbus and the New World, and of course that also fits into the whole actually secret Jews, white people, kind of Scandinavian, Aryan nations, Christian identity, BS, that these creeps from Stoned Kingdom, no, they're not stoned, they'd be Mellow Earth, they were stoned. But Jude wrote a couple of evenings ago, in referencing Columbus, Chapter 1 of Young People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. God, I miss him. The list keeps getting longer, I guess, and that's natural as you get older. Howard Zinn, Kurt Vonnegut, Hunter S. Thompson, Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. When Christopher Columbus and his soldiers came ashore, this is from Howard Zinn's Chapter 1 of The Young People's History of the United States. When Christopher Columbus and his soldiers came ashore carrying swords, the Arawaks, those were the indigenous people, the Arawaks ran to greet them. Columbus wrote later about the Indians in his ship's log. This is what he wrote. They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawk's bells. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built, with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms and do not know them. For I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They had no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subjugate them and make them do what we want. It's 1492, and though he hasn't though he will not name it for nearly 300 years, longer than the existence of this country. Although Adam Smith will not call it capitalism for nearly 300 more years, capitalism is in the borning. Just for a moment, play Christopher Columbus in your own mind. Be Christopher Columbus. You've just sailed across the ocean. You've dodged a near mutiny. And what happens? You meet people that no one else has ever seen before. Right? And it's the 15th century, so naturally any recollections are going to be rendered in your ship's log. And at the close of what had to be an astonishing day, you go and you record your impressions of that moment. I'm so glad that Jude sent this along. And your thoughts are zooming through your mind, and your quill pen holding hand can't keep up. And so you jot down, they brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawk's bells. What does that tell you? I mean, can we be kind of analytical for a minute? It tells you that they were used to trading, that people typically showed up on their beaches and had stuff to swap. As noted, they had some gold on them, but no gold on the island. Must mean it's coming from somewhere else. That means trade. They exchanged all those things for glass beads and hawk's bells. I have no idea what hawk's bells are unless they're really bells that you put around a hawk's neck. They willingly traded everything they owned. And there's no reference to any sort of profit basis to the trading, just equal exchange. He notes they were well-built with good bodies and handsome features. And that's as far as the decent sort of observations extend, because the next thing you hear is, they don't bear arms. In other words, they didn't seem particularly warlike, and they didn't have any stuff that was very threatening to us. And they don't know them, for I showed them a sword, and they took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. Maybe if they'd taken one of those swords and run through one of the Spaniards, things would have turned out differently, but probably not. They weren't that kind of people. They had no iron. Well, if they don't have any iron, they're not going to be making any guns. That means they're not going to oppose us. Their spears are made of cane. Well, their cane can't stand up to our steel breastplates. Bang! Idea! They'd make fine servants! Because being Europeans going abroad, they naturally, you know, since their God had imbued them with certain powers, they knew that everybody else was inferior to them. That's one of the things their Christianity taught them. And then the wheels really start turning. You can almost imagine the smoke coming out of Columbus's ears. With 50 men, we could subjugate them and make them do what we want. And that's what they did. Jude noting in her email, remember, Bob, the Arawaks were living in the Bahama Islands and were one in consciousness with the Indians living on the land of the Americas. And what was their most internal formidable gift? It was hospitality and sharing. Jude noting something I said earlier, such a loss in having Howard Zinn leave this pale blue dot. Yet it is now our responsibility to continue the truth. And Jude says, which you, brother, do so well. That's so very sweet, Jude. Thank you. Jim noting, the Shrine of the Holy Tortilla. Back in 1983, a Mexican lady had a religious impression appear upon a tortilla. Her kitchen was visited by over 15,000 pilgrims. For real, to each his own, signed Jim. What a sad manifestation of the desperation of suffering humanity. I mean, the stories are funny and weird and silly for people who have a bit of integrity about them. But by the same token, it's sad. Because the world they live in is so harsh and so brutal that the only hope is in some sort of magic. David in Tennessee noting in regard to the story of Columbus, and shall we remember and reinforce the same? Those people knew trade, honest trade, the progenitor of real capitalism, not the rigged zero-sum game of screw the other person out of everything that we have today. Value for value. Or perhaps not even value for value. Kate noting, giving away everything they own is traditional potlatch conduct, a way to honor and express gratitude for all they have. Potlatches being something that happened among the Northwest peoples. And may have happened elsewhere as well. We don't know. The folks who did that kind of thing were too busy getting dead at the hands of white folks. And, you know, I bring this up simply because it is impossible that reference in the quote that Mike sent along, it is impossible to reference things like, history is just God's plan put into motion over time.
You can't say that if you actually know history. Because in that momentous, that literally world-changing instant on a beach in 1492, somewhere in the Bahamas, everything changed, and the bad guys won. On the one hand, you had peoples who were acting and behaving in the ways that the holy book that the bad guys had said people should act. And the people with the holy book, however, looked at them and thought, oh, we can make servants of them. We can enslave them. Oh, we can make a lot of money. David, there's that zero-sum game you were talking about. It was a confrontation between integrity and rapacity. And we are paying for it down the ages to this day. And paying, and paying, and paying. We could subjugate them easily with 50 men. Right? I mention this because this is one of the stories that I wanted to get to. Sandra sent this along toward the end of the program last evening. And it just, as I was looking at where the program needed to go this evening, it just seemed to fit. Dateline Alabama Stan. The Alabama House of Representatives, after a lengthy debate this evening, that would be yesterday evening, approved a bill to let private businesses contract with the state prison system for inmate labor. This is one of the fixes to their hateful immigration law.
Well, we done run off all the Mexicans. Reckon we can rent out the prisoners? Yep.
Now, there cannot be any more clear definition of involuntary servitude than this, at least in 21st century America. Private businesses will contract with the state prison system for inmate labor. And of all the members, 95 to be precise, of the 95 present members voting on that piece of legislation, only 22 people in that body had the common decency and integrity to say, no, this is not something we should be doing. 22 people said it wouldn't be a good idea to have the corrections commissioner enter into contracts with businesses to have inmates build or assemble their products within the prisons. You got that? Having inmates build or assemble their products within the prisons. This is a state that has pinned its hopes on economic recovery, on bringing in companies like Hyundai and Mercedes-Benz and there's another one. Can't remember which one. But now they're going to lure business in with slave labor. Because, again, I ask you to sort of transport yourself to that place and be there and understand the reality of it. You're doing hard time in Bama. Son. And, you know, this isn't all warm and fuzzy like the Shawshank Redemption.
Andy worked in that warden's office for 10 years.
No. You're in prison because you did something to run afoul of law in one of the harshest, most brutal political subdivisions of the United States, Alabamistan. Chances are that you are disproportionately more likely to be dark-skinned. Son, got an opportunity for you. We are going to pay you 17 cents an hour. You hear me? We're going to pay you to let you work for Mr. Jones over here making widgets. And don't get you get any crazy notions in your head, son. We're not going to let you out of here to go work for Mr. Jones. This ain't no work release program, son. This is Alabama. But we're going to pay you 17 cents an hour to work for Mr. Jones. And if you do a real good job, you're going to get you a skill. That way you have your skill when you get out of here in 32 years. And maybe we'll cut a little good time on that, son. Now, you want to go work for 17 cents an hour for Mr. Jones, don't you? How can you say no? There's no free will in this. It is compulsory servitude. Yeah, but we're paying them, so that means it ain't slavery. No, Cephas. You got to go read your history. There was lots of paid slaves in world history, which is only God's plan put in motion through time. My, that sounds academic, doesn't it? So here's the deal. The prison system is going to keep around 40% of the inmates' wages to help cover incarceration costs. They're going to take another 40% to help cover any restitution the inmate was ordered to pay his or her victims. So, no, I wasn't kidding about that 17 cents. You can spend that at the commissary on chewing gum and condoms and whatever you want, son. The bill is sponsored by Representative Jim McClendon, a repig-licking from Springville. He said it's a win-win. It'll provide funds to the state's cash-strapped prison system, and it'll help inmates earn money and gain experience. Well, what the hell good is that experience going to be when they get out of Gen Pop and get released into the world, and there ain't any jobs because the prisoners are all doing the jobs of the skills that they picked up doing when they were slaves in prison? We're going to put our prisoners to work. They're going to be paid a reasonable wage. Guess who the significant majority of those 22 people objecting to the bill were by voting against it? African-American legislators filibustered the bill for several hours, arguing the program could take jobs from Alabama citizens, which it will, and give selected companies access to cheap workers to whom they do not have to provide benefits, which is true. You know, every now and then you'll hear some right-wing conservative talking about how black folks need to get over it, and then using that goofy-ass phrase, post-racial society. Not in Alabama, baby! Uh-uh! From April, about this time, 1865 to the present, a whole lot of states down behind the cornbread curtain have been trying to figure out a way to keep on running the slavery racket without calling it slavery, and these geniuses in Alabamistan have just run absolutely right up against it. Oh, this is genius. But even the people who voted against the bill kind of came at it from an odd direction. Representative Rod Scott, Democrat of Fairfield, said, "We're going to give jobs to people who are incarcerated versus citizens who've led decent lives, stayed out of trouble, and need employment." And here's the fun part. The bill now goes to the governor for his signature. David in Tennessee noting, "This is a reliving and a reviving of prisoner labor that was a nightmare all the way up into the 1960s, all over Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, etc." And yes, the PBS doc Slavery by another name would be more than useful in this context. David suggesting have a watch so as to see the past that the Alabama Stan folks want to become the present again. Everything old is new again. And speaking of going back to the future, no, this is not Back to the Future. This is making the future into the past. Dateline Nashville. 90 years ago, they had the Scopes Monkey Trial. Put a man on criminal trial for having taught the theory of evolution as science. It was the media circus of its day, garnering the talents of Clarence Darrow on one side, the side of the thinking, rational people, pitted against William Jennings Bryan, the great progressive populist of his day, mind you, on the side of God and the state of Tennessee. Everything old is new again. It is very likely that Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam will sign into law a measure passed by the Tennessee General Assembly that protects teachers who allow students to criticize evolution and other scientific theories like global warming. That's a funny way of describing this goofy-ass bill. Haslam said, I think the one thing about that bill is this. Nothing about the curriculum of the state of Tennessee will change, and the scientific standards won't change, so I think some of the discussion about its impact has probably been overblown. What this means is that the teacher can, just on the blind luck of the draw of the children who happen to have the misfortune of being in that teacher's class, the teacher can teach them in science class, you know, that business about Adam and Eve riding to church on the back of a dinosaur, right? Maybe she's in the Ken Ham camp.
I want to teach you something very special this morning, and I want you to remember this, boys and girls, something you'll never forget. Has any human being always been there, yes or no?
No.
Has any scientist always been there?
No.
Who's the only one who's always been there?
God.
Who knows everything? So, in a big loud voice, who should you always trust first, God or the scientist? God. And I want you to remember that.
And the teacher can teach that kind of crap in science class, and nobody can do a damn thing about it. It reminds me of that Texas law where if little Johnny is asked on a second grade math test what's 2 and 2, and little Johnny says 2 plus 2 is 12 because Jesus told me so, then the teacher has to mark it correct. Miracle math made easy. And let's say you're a rational human being and your child goes to school in Tennessee and comes home and says, Mommy, Daddy, did you know that the theory of evolution is a demonic plot to confuse the unbelievers, and that, well, here's what I heard today in school, Mommy, Daddy.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
And that's what I learned in school today, Mommy. And if you're normal and you're rational and you're reasonable and you got a brain about you, you can't do a damn thing about it. You can complain to the school board, and the school board, well, we're sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Normal, but we can't do a thing about that teacher over there in that biology class. State law says he's got the right to teach that the Earth is 6.5 weeks old, and that everything else is an illusion because he's is protected. That's religious freedom in the state of Tennessee, ma'am, sir, Mr. and Mrs. Normal. Now, why don't y'all just go on home and mark your calendars and make sure you don't forget to get in church next Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, and maybe you'll get a spirit of comprehension, a gift of the spirit next time you're in church, and you won't be in here wasting the board's time talking about how we're supporting the ruination of the mind of your child when your child needs to be in church, not in some daggone atheistic, agnostic, unbelieving home. I think we're going to call Child Protective Services right now. Ulysses, go get Child Protective Services on the line. I think we got atheists here teaching a child, and that's child abuse in my book. Yeah, sure, that's satire, but how satirical is it? David in Tennessee, noting the Tennessee law on teaching this foo-frog about global warming. Sheesh, who the bloody hell thinks arguing with a thermometer is based on science? Just asking. But as, as Albert noted last night on the program, well, what about Little Ice Age? Little knowledge is a... It's one of their bugbears, the deniers. Kim noting, you do realize no one can say homosexual like a Southerner. No, there's a lot of words nobody can say like a Southerner. How nice. So that's where we begin this prayer meeting Wednesday. Sorry I skipped the hymn and the shtick about the blood red carpet and everything, but daggum, you know what? When reality is weirder than the shtick that you use, I think you gotta go with the reality. You know, when the legend becomes history, print the legend. When reality becomes the shtick, do the reality. I was taken completely by surprise when old Vince decided to lay hands on my white. You reckon he would have laid hands on me if my skin been a little darker? No, I don't think so neither. She said, "Nah, it's all right, brother. But there was a bunch of them there, and they're scary when they're together in a bunch. So I apologize for my cowardice." Can't live with them. Can't send them to the moon. So that's where we find ourselves this prayer meeting Wednesday, the 4th of April, 2012. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and your thoughts, your calls, your comments, your considerations, your emails, they all are welcome. The phone lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, email Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, which also happens to be the address you use if you want to log into PayPal and help us keep this little effort afloat, which will be much appreciated. This is The Horn, and we will be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
By the way, I should mention that this is day two of Agnes using her roll-on pain relief liquid from healinghollers.com, H-E-A-L-I-N-hollers, H-O-L-L-E-R-S.com. Alice over there has created a wonderful line of products that, my goodness gracious, they're good. Make you feel better. Just pleasant. Go on over and try it if you haven't. You will be happy that you did. Agnes is now an official fan of Alice and her work at Healing Hollers. Healing Hollers with a hyphen in the middle, .com. 15 minutes past the hour, and it is time that we should go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David from Maine, what's happening?
Not much. Just another Wednesday.
Well, I mean, they're all special, though.
Yes, they're all special, exactly right. They're prayer meeting Wednesdays.
Yes, they are. And
just to plug it in once more, prayer meeting Wednesday.
Prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn.
You need some special chimes and music in the background when you say that.
Yeah, like chanting monks or something. That's something we could add.
Something like that.
Yeah, maybe one of these evenings we'll do prayer meeting Wednesday with chanting monks in the background.
Well, you know, that would definitely spice it up a notch somehow.
I think that could be fun. That's a great idea.
You know, there are always some monks that are in need of some extra side gigs, and, you know, this could just be the one that puts them over the top for the week.
It would be nice. It would be nice.
Religion is a very tricky thing in this country because it's so, we're so completely inundated with it. You have to walk on eggshells so you don't offend anyone. But it's only a one-way street. Everyone of one specific religion, that being Christianity, can offend everyone and their mother.
But no one dare offend Christianity.
Yeah, but right, exactly. No one, and probably because, you know, the Christianity... they have such a marching machine behind them that as soon as anyone dares defy the make light of a religion such as Christianity, that you are instantly branded as a blasphemer, a sinner, a heretic, through pretty much all of talk radio, the most of the newspapers, op-ed columns, now the internet with a click of a button, and because they have endless amounts of money, I don't see religion going away in my lifetime.
No, nor I. It hasn't.
Children's lifetime.
It hasn't gone away in the last 100,000 years, but it is. It is at least a goal.
Right. But then. I think the problem is that, as you were talking about, when you have next to nothing, you need something to carry on with your life, even if it is a little bit hysterical and comes from the land of fairy tales.
Right. You know, Kate just pointed something out, David. She said, from now on, watch for those little fish plastered on everything. And I think what she's saying is be aware of it. Be alerted or heightened in your consciousness to it. Watch for those little fish plastered on everything. And I'm not talking about those fun little Pepperidge Farm goldfish. I love those.
Right.
Especially when there's a bowl of them sitting at the bar and you munch on them with your beer.
You're talking about the Jesus fish.
The Jesus fish.
Right.
From now on, watch for those little fish plastered on everything. The little lapel buttons, the cross dangling on everything. And look for their book laying on the front seat. You're right, Bob. They are everywhere and damn spooky. I never know who I'm offending out there.
Yeah, it is a...
Oh, she adds one thing. She said, you've learned your lesson well, Bob. While cruising motel parking lots, don't let them get close enough to lay hands on you. Well, that makes it sound a little nefarious, doesn't it, David? I mean, I wasn't cruising no motel parking lots. That's what the fundies do. I was out there smoking a cigarette and being neighborly. I think that's the real... enough with his neighborly business. Enough with, you know, actually doing the stuff that Jesus told us to do. There's weirdos out there.
And you know, about that fish, it is the worst... it is the most poorly designed fish I've ever seen. At least put some effort into it. You know, make some detail. Put
a little perspective, maybe.
Yeah,
you know.
Put some guilt on it, for God's sake.
How about a scale or two? Maybe a dorsal fin?
Right. If you're going to do that.
How many successful fish are there out there, David, that ain't got a damn fin?
I'm surprised they didn't put a suspended crucifix in the center. You know?
Well, but see, back then when they started using that fish, crucifixes were scary.
Okay.
Yeah, because they were still in use. Right? Consequently, you wouldn't want to be walking around with those on saying, you know, that's like saying, use this on me.
Well, it is a brilliant branding, because you don't have to hire an illustrator or a logo specialist. Just say, draw that. We're going to print them up.
Well, you know, as I said, Agnes had a doctor's appointment in Charleston earlier today, and so we drove down the mountain, and every little church down there had their pair of intersecting cross ties, and they had draped some purple piece of cloth that they got at the Walmart over it. And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, we actually know a little bit of history. If you want that to be the symbol, then you drape the purple piece of cloth over the cross, the cross beam, and you leave the vertical part out, because that just stayed up. You know, that's a whole bunch of hassle. When you've got to periodically execute murder, when you periodically got to murder people for having the wrong ideas, putting the whole shebang up every time—that's a pain in the ass. What you do is you leave the vertical in the ground up there on the hill, just as a not so gentle reminder, and then you let the poor slob that's getting the deed done to him carry his own crossbar up the hill. Just as a further little gentle, I mean, there wasn't no last meal of, you know, and I had a cheeseburger and French fries with a dill pickle, and none of that business. No, the only representation is actually the cross tie, and purple, royal purple. That was done to mock that itinerant rabbi, as was the sign. You know, INRI. Most people, and this was, I was told this by a Roman Catholic friend of mine. He said, most of my life I thought that stood for I'm nailed right in. But it actually stands for Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaicum, which means Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. That's all mockery. You know, the crown of thorns, that was mockery. And yet the church goes, let's get that out for Easter. I love the crown of thorns part. Yeesh.
They missed out on a lot. You know, they could have the cross boomerang and Jesus comes back to you.
Yeah, I think you've just whispered something in the universe's ear.
Well, you know, there's so much possibility.
Jesus is coming. Kleenex boxes.
Yeah, there you go. I wasn't going to do that. It's a dinner time. I went with the boomerang instead. But Yeah, I mean, the when you talk about the whole Jesus fish, just to put this in perspective, every time I'm in stock at my store online, I can't keep in stock Jesus fish. It's always out.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not kidding. It goes really fast because, you know, it's a powerful symbol. It's like I sell a lot of crosses too. I don't sell a lot of that is one of the most.
You're not selling a bunch of Ganishes out there, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not selling that. I'm not selling a lot of pentagrams. I'm selling a lot of crosses though, and you can look through the ages and you just see how much they pressed it out on all the various metals, going through copper to silver to gold. Got to have the crosses out there.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the observation Lottie making in the chat room this evening, of course, just think what Christians would be wearing around their necks if they had electric chair execution at the time. Yeah, what if they'd hanged him? Would everybody be walking around with a noose around their necks? That'd be a little creepy.
That would definitely be a bit creepy. I see a theocracy coming to this country if they crash the economy further, because that's the only thing that people will cling to. You know, I hear a lot of people who are like Tom Hartman and other people and bloggers and writers and talk about, because when this happens and if this happens, people are going to wake up. And I'm like, yeah, but your logical theories that you're explaining multiple pages, there's nothing like a bumper sticker saying God can sort this out. Bam.
God said it. How many decades have I been seeing this bumper sticker? I mean, since I could read, David. God said it. I believe it. That settles it.
You know, I actually, in my family, and someday I'm going to have to read some diary entries for you. My family comes from one of the prestigious, crazy religious cults. I don't know if I mentioned this before on the program, called the Shilohs.
Oh, wow.
And, my great-grandfather was actually, he was so insane, Bob, he went to Palestine to wander in the desert. I'm not making this up. I have the journal entries to prove it. For like 4 years to convince Palestinians to be Christians. And any Middle Eastern person that he came into contact, he was like, are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? And you read these entries and you're like, this guy is so...
Are there any journal entries where he say, glory hallelujah, I got one?
No, I think that there's a photo and he looks like, he's about to go, to go searching in the pyramids for King Tut. He really got into it, man. I was like,
oh, and the thing is, when that bug bites you, what's the song? This is a lyric. We're going to play Name That Tune. It's a Jimmy Buffett song. Ah, I know what the song is. Okay, and when that bug bites you, you live with the sting. Okay, just a little side story. There was a really rich guy here in West Virginia whose last name was Coffindaffer. Coffindaffer.
Right.
And if you've ever driven through the Middle Atlantic and down into the South, every now and then, you will see on some far hillside two blue and one yellow crosses just sort of planted out in the middle of nowhere, usually on a high point. Those are known as Coffindaffer crosses. And they were put there because he had amassed so much wealth that he decided that the best use of his wealth in the waning years of his life was not to do any of that Jesus-y stuff like feeding the poor, housing the homeless, or clothing the naked, or visiting the sick. No. The best use of his vast accumulation of wealth was to go, and in West Virginia, he did it in several places. Every 5 miles, there's a set of Coffindaffer crosses. That was his mission. And once he got tired of that, or God got tired of it, or whoever got tired of it, he had a vision. And like your multi-great-grandfather, David,
mm-hmm.
he went to Israel. only back when your multi-great-grandfather did it, it was still Palestine, not Israel.
Right.
But Mr. Coffendaffer went to Israel because he had been told in a dream by the Lord, who he knew on sight, of course. Is that you, Lord? Well, it has to be. He'd been told in a dream to go and drill for oil. Now, every geologist from Dan to Bathsheba knows that there is no oil in Israel. No oil in the West Bank either, for that matter. It's some of the poorest property in the region when you get right down to it, although not much of the property in the region could be qualified as good or excellent. And so he went there and drilled for oil and got bupkis and kept on drilling. He drilled himself poor, if I recall the story correctly. But he did it because God done told him to. And see, that's the problem. So many people don't understand that God is a God of irony. And that was just to give God a chuckle. You got to be careful with it, because God, I mean, it's like sometimes the God sends us on snipe hunts. You know what snipe hunting is, right, David?
Right.
You know where you take the gullible little kid in the middle of the night and you lead him out into the poison ivy and you give him a pan and a wooden spoon and tell him to bang on it and yell, "Here, snipe, 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 snipe."
You're conjuring up images of the Cliff Clavin and Cheers when they went out hunting for
snipes.
Right, snipes.
Yeah,
that's what comes to mind.
Right up there, you know, it's slightly older than the ancient ritual of cow tipping.
I do find it funny that.
But that's what God does to people sometimes.
Hey. I find it funny that God went for him to search for not white gold but black gold.
Texas tea.
Right. So you would.
But because God is a God of irony, that's what he does. Because if you buy into the whole religious thing, which I don't, this is how it really works. God gives you lots and lots of wealth, and he's also got this book that tells you how you're supposed to behave when you're wealthy. And when you don't do that, then God sends you on a snipe hunt to make you lose all of your wealth again. Some rich people he sends to Vegas, and he makes the devil appear in the form of a blackjack dealer. Other people he sends to drill for oil in Israel. Makes sense? Because it makes a ton of sense to me.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to buy into a religious scheme, that's the one I'm going to buy into.
I think you look at our financial institutions and how they're mirroring so many things regarding the religious institutions, the symbols, the teachings, the nonsense that just continues to spray from a lot of these hedge fund managers, these brokerage firms, all of their slogans and everything, and no matter what comes up to in the face of that reality, it's always, well, you just got to give it some time, or you just did it wrong. You're not investing properly.
Yeah,
and it's just constantly, it's the great religion is the greatest swindle, and I would say,
The more I think about it, David, we really do have to get that Jesus is coming Kleenex box out. The fundies will buy it. And never even realize that the joke's on them.
They may, it's funny you mention about the fundies, because over at the Fox Network, I hear that they've just signed a new they've signed their token someone from the left.
Oh, a new token liberal, a new token doormat.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised by this one. And I actually wonder if it's some kind of setup for the future. They signed Jesse Jackson's daughter.
Hmm.
You know, when money calls, Bob. When money calls.
Oh, look! I mean, just because my phone, just because that particular phone has never rung here, doesn't mean that I don't think about it. I hate to say it, but here, let me do it, and contributions will dry up even more. If Fox called,
I'd pick up the phone.
Wow.
You know why? Because I like it when it doesn't rain in my bedroom. I like it when I like it when the parts to fix the mower aren't as much as a new mower, and I don't have to make those distinctions. It's reality. I mean, and frankly, you know, I rely for my source in this. I rely on that modern day prophet Anthony Bourdain,
right?
Who says, you know, I used to criticize people for being sellouts, and then I realized that I would sell out in a minute too. And he says that his epiphany, if you will, came when he had a kid, because he waited until considerably later in life before he became a father. And he said, all of a sudden, I realized that, you know, that everything that I had said about Emeril was probably a little harsh, because, you know, there was Emeril at the top of Emeril Enterprises supporting 1,000 people by being Emeril. And he said, that's a hell of a burden and a responsibility. So he said, you know, and it was in that book of his, Medium Raw. He said, you know, essentially we are, you know, we all have a price. So, I'm sure the hate mail will come in. Well, God damn you, Bob, for not being willing to live in ignominious poverty for the rest of your days. I'm sorry, noble poverty. But would, you know, I would probably last a shorter period of time on Fox than Michael Savage lasted on MSNBC for entirely different reasons. I'd probably accidentally say booger or something. You know, whereas Michael Savage was thrown off of MSNBC for telling some caller to his program to go and eat a big one and get AIDS and die.
Well, I think what definitely would happen is they would get you on your hillbilly elitism background.
Oh, that'd be why they signed me. I don't want to use any specific examples. They'd give me a pair of overalls and a sign that said BR549, and, you know, set me up there as, it'd be great shtick. But you know what? I watch things like the little palace coup over at Current TV, and I think, you know, the paycheck would be nice, but would it be worth that? So instead, I just, you know, this is Wednesday, and I'm playing the lottery.
I looked at the specifics of that contract that Oberman had, and I was like, wow. I mean, I hope you land. If you land back at MSNBC, I mean, good luck dealing with all those people that you had problems with before. My suggestion would be, since you have this much money, and he seems to be having such trouble working with networks, is he might want to try and start his own network.
That's a thought, but it's also very problematic, because there's a big difference between being, like, say, the managing editor and hosting a program, which is basically, like, you know, Walter Cronkite, that
right.
kind of stuff, and actually running the network, because there's a lot of annoying crap in the latter that you just don't want to deal with.
Now, Bob, how would you know about that?
I don't, but I was once upon a time a program director at a radio station. And it's No, I know where you were going. But no, I've never had those problems.
Right.
The only thing that plagued me was the desperate desire to get people to fund the horn so that we could pay the people who were, and that's still the problem.
And you know, that's a perfect segue. And speaking of that, I think people need to know how they can contribute to the program.
Well, you know, you log into your PayPal account, pending the actual reappearance of the PayPal button on the website. You log into your PayPal account,
mm-hmm.
and do send money, and the address you use is Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com, because that's the same address that's attached to the PayPal button when it's up and functioning. And you select personal and gift, apparently that only works in the United States. But that way there's no transaction fees on the process. So yeah, there you go.
Now, say they don't have email, though, Bob. They must. There must be another way to reach you.
There is. You know, we have the snail mail address that Tamara put to use earlier this evening, as she noted in her email. It's 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, E-I-S-E-N-H-O-W-E-R Drive, P-M-B, which stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, W-V, 25801. Operators are not standing by.
Now, speaking of contributions, I do have this newsroom DVD set still waiting for.
I still need an address.
Uh-oh.
And the person who you know, there were like three people who were just bang, bang, bang. But the quickest on the draw was our buddy Jug of Punch, who is in the chat room, and I still need a mailing address.
Jug of Punch, we need a mailing address. I guarantee you're going to laugh your ass off when you see these. When you see this series in its entirety, you don't just get one season, you get more than three seasons. And a special. You can't beat it.
Absolutely. So need that address. And by the way, the video giveaways have been a great idea, David.
It's not just going to be a DVD. I'm thinking up some other things as well.
Well, I know, because the wheels never stop turning. I've known you for a long time.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention, though, was if you checked in your email, I just sent you a story on an article on the Google glasses that they are testing out now called Project Glass.
Yeah, what is this? I opened it, but I haven't. Augmented reality glasses?
Yeah, apparently. You know what they remind me of? They do remind me of the Lieutenant LaForge, if we're going to go Star Trek.
Yeah, you have to go there. The minute you see the photo, you go, well, that's Geordi LaForge's thing.
But he's not wearing the Kanye West type of Venetian shades. So it is interesting that it's going like that to augmented reality. But I do want to say, I have a story for you.
Well, okay, hang on to the story, because I do have one little thing to add in here. I have become an absolute fan of a website called Letters of Note.
Letters of Note. I've heard about this.
This is the website that first broke the To My Old Master letter.
Right.
And it's got all kinds of correspondence from various time periods. The person who does it is simply brilliant in digging this stuff up. And one of them they have is a casting letter for Star Trek The Next Generation before it began production, you know, back in the late 80s. And, Patrick Stewart was already in the running for Picard, but the real dandy out of it is Brent Spiner was not even in consideration for the role of Data, and the role of Geordi LaForge, the front runner for that was Wesley Snipes.
Hmm.
Interesting. It would be a completely different program, wouldn't it?
It would be. He would be complaining about his taxes.
Now stop that.
No, but the other thing I wanted to mention was
he'd use his visor to see special exemptions and loopholes in the tax code.
Right. See, now you're doing it too.
Well, one good deserves or one bad one deserves another.
But so the story I wanted to mention to you, this is the teaser. I can't mention it on the program now, but it is a mind-blowing story. It will be the mind-blowing story of the entire week, ladies and gentlemen. And when I heard it, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And it will set the wheels in your mind turning and turning and turning. And then when you wake up, they'll be turning faster. Every day they'll be turning faster. And then you'll just be going around in circles until you're just constant question marks surround you in your complete walking life. Bob, when I saw the story, I was like, This is unreal, and this is amazing, and like I said, when you guys hear this, a lot of people will just be like, your breath will be taken out of you. You'll be like, that's just so amazing, and then the fact that it's not on the news shouldn't surprise us at all, but if this was a parallel universe, this would be the number one story in the news right now.
Wow. All right.
All right. And I leave you with that.
I am teased.
That's the teaser. Oh, speaking of the contributions, we will be doing another rollout this month. I haven't decided what it's going to be, but keep your eyes peeled, people, and I guarantee it'll be something really, really cool.
Awesome. David, thanks for the call. Always good to talk to you.
All right, Bob, later.
Later now. Pop culture correspondent and fundraising brainstormer, too, for that matter, David, calling from Maine. By the way, also in her note, Kate noted, I am overwhelmed with gratitude, praise God, that the icky old preacher didn't show up. And thank you, Jugga Punch. I will be forwarding your address to David presently, like after the show ends. We do have a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. You know the number, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
So you all right? You breathe it into the universe, and then there are the glasses, right?
There they are.
The computer's in your pocket. I could be on the phone with you browsing Google just with a flick of my eye. You know, all kinds of things like that. It's all coming. It's all beautiful, and I love all this stuff. And, you know.
One of the guys working on Project Glass for Google has developed contact lenses with pixels embedded in the display.
Mm-hmm. And then there'll be organic light-emitting diodes, and then you'll get a retina implant. And, you know, I mean, these kinds of things, you know, I guess they could sound real scary, I guess, you know. But doesn't everything sound scary? I'm sure fire was scary for 100,000 years.
Fire bad!
Ooga, you know, and now we found that we were using that a million years before they thought we were, and
you know, there were fundies back then, too. If God had meant us to have fire, he would, if God had meant us to eat cooked meat, he would have given us fire.
Amen.
You know, and that's back when we had the brow ridges and the big, big honking jaws to support the, and the wisdom teeth actually worked all to support the, and the appendix was a necessary part of the colon.
That's my skull you're talking about.
Hey!
I resent that.
I resemble that remark.
Oh, boy. I got all that stuff. I still have my wisdom teeth. But anyway. Thanks, Brother Bob.
Oh, sorry. How was I to know?
I don't know. You know, you sit there and you talk about the symbol, you know, the fish. But, see, that really takes us to the root. It isn't the symbol of the fish or what have you. You know, it's the symbol of the fish because, I don't know, you know the legend behind that, right? You used to go into a town or an area, you'd go near the wall, you'd carve the little curved line. You come back a couple days later, if someone completed the curve and made the fish, well, you had a little meeting at the moonlight near the hickory tree and you talked about Jesus.
Right, because the symbol of the fish, the importance of the symbolism of the fish, it lies in the tail.
Mm.
Because that makes the Greek letter chi.
Mm-hmm.
And chi, you can't write Christus or Christos without chi. It's chi, rho, iota, sigma, tau, Omicron, Sigma. Spelling in Greek with Bob Kincaid. Scintillating radio. Next up.
Did you say Sigma? Is that Sigma?
Next up, Mississippi.
Miss Stan. Stan. You can't. Honestly, I was watching. Because you had mentioned yesterday in our conversation, talked about Van Jones, and I was like, oh, that's right, I missed that one. So I had to go watch it. And, you know, and of course, I mean, he almost said it verbatim. You even said Cumberbuns, if I remember correctly.
I think I did say Cumberbund.
Yeah. What's up? How you doing, Van?
Hey, Van. Hey, Fred.
Come on, Van. Come on.
All hail K.
You know, but
Agnes was waiting for me after the show, and she was just beaming. She was so proud of herself because she heard me cackling back here.
Boy. Trixie Agnes.
Yeah.
But, you know, but, I mean, you're going to have to excuse me a little bit. I've been arguing with people who think that they should get a gun permit to fight the government, and those are always good ones.
Did you know, the
I get the foam truck out just to make sure it doesn't spread. You know what I mean? That's the only thing you could do.
Yeah, I want the little Men in Black flashy thing.
I just bring up, boys, neutron bomb. You know, you guys are sitting there, all right, boys, I'm going to get this government, I need it. And that's what it'll be. You know what I mean? You know,
yeah, because for all the time that they spend worrying about their black helicopters. They don't think, I guess, they're going to bring the black helicopter. No, it's going to be a fair fight out in the middle of the road. I'm going to bring my shooting peacemaker, and he's going to line up opposite me just like our founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr.
That's what it is. It's just like, you guys got to stop. Guess who called?
Because it's illegal to use tear gas canisters or passive denial weapons on patriotic, liberty-loving American Second Amendment gun owner.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, heck, they don't even need the military tools. Dick Cheney and the rest, you know, will bring a couple of bodies for spare parts. They'll go in the bunker and they'll push the button.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned Dick Cheney, because I got to, this story won't leave my mind, Albert, because the resemblances are far, far too close. And, you know, Mr. Cheney received his heart from an anonymous donor.
Mm-hmm. Trayvon Martin.
Wrong.
Hey, if he comes out, you know, starting to be hip-hop, you see Dick Cheney with a grill. You know, sometimes they say the body part, you know, you never know.
I was just thinking that somewhere in a box is a very disappointed Renfield. Oh, yes, Master, you said you will bring me back as one of the undead like you. I shall wait patiently with a little soil from the old country.
Yes, yes. That's what that is. Wait for me.
See? See? Hey, by the way, we've got a film recommendation in that will probably speak to you. Robert in Australia writing in, based on the mention of the Little Ice Age and the sun's 300-year cycle. He wrote in and said, watching a fascinating BBC documentary called Global Weirding last night. It covered the cause of the Little Ice Age. It turns out the sun appears to have a 300-year as well as an 11-year sunspot cycle. Records from the time show that all sunspot activity disappeared completely for 50 years. This meant a reduction in the UV light reaching the Earth, which created the conditions to change the pattern of the jet stream, allowing cold wind to come into Europe from the east instead of the warm winds coming in from the Atlantic. The result is the Little Ice Age.
Mm-hmm. And if I may expand on that a little
bit. So global weirding.
Yeah, global weird. I mean, but think about this. Between 2008 and 2009, we had zero sunspots. We had none. So for 2 years, right, we were already climbing up in the 90s and then, right, 98, 95, 96, 97, right? And then 98 comes around, 2008, 2009 come around, you know, we've already had, you know, 2005, all these hot years, this is hottest year, record, and then we have this lull, 2 year lull in the sunspot cycle. And we're keep adding carbon, you know, carbon dioxide, and, you know, like, they weren't doing that at this time, you know what I mean? And we only got a 2 year reprieve. You know, go to spaceweather.com right now. Go look. I guarantee you the sunspot cycle is like, 600, you know, in the past year or 2 years or whatever we've had it. You know, I mean, it's, you know, and it's amping up. This is the year it's supposed to hit its maximum. You know what I mean? So, you know, adding carbon dioxide is not, you know, at parts that we haven't seen since, you know, stromatophores were the dominant life force on the planet. I mean, you know, what are we at, 395 parts per million in carbon dioxide now?
Yeah, we blew on past 350, didn't we?
Yeah, 50 is what?
We didn't take that exit.
No, when they were doing the 350, we were past the 350. You know, that was more, I think they wanted to cut back and then so we can get back to it, you know. But yeah, we're in uncharted territory now. And that's the other, just arguing with these people. And I get a call from the Republicans today. The Republicans, and the guy says to me, he's like, I got three questions for you. And I'm like, okay, go ahead. Oh, how do you rate?
What's your favorite color? What's your quest?
No, this is what, how do you rate Walker's job performance? Terrible, I tell him. Well, he's like, are you going to vote for, he's like, I'm like, of course. I'm like, of course I'm voting for getting this guy out of here. What are you talking about? Then he's like, okay, okay, thank you, you know, for your, I'm like, I thought you said three. I was like, oh, I misspoke. Yeah, sure, you did. You misspoke. Get out of here. Don't call me again. Put me off your list. You don't need nothing.
And just as a general reminder that the right wing aren't the only ones doing stupid robocalling. Mm. Well, I mean, they are doing stupid robocalling. I had a note from Jude earlier today. Her telephone has been victimized.
Mm-hmm.
Santorum robocalls, I believe it was.
That's an instant click if I hear that guy's voice in the end of it. What? I ain't listening to that.
And now he's all excited to be going to campaign in Pennsylvania, where they didn't just make steel, they made liberty.
What? Didn't he just? Romney still hasn't squared this up yet. Are you serious?
Nope. No, I'm very serious.
Vote for him. I was going to go vote for him yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. Jude didn't get the robocall, but yeah, there are, and this is Wednesday after all, and you're going to love this. Jews and Christians together, which I think spells jacked. Robocall goes out to voters as presidential primary. This is what was running in like Alabama and Mississippi and Ohio, Stan, and places like that. It's very short. We got to share this together, Albert.
Oh goodness, I'm sitting.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Brian Kamaker. I'm a Jew from Massachusetts.
And this is Darcy Brandon. I'm a Christian from California. If you believe, as we do, that marriage and sexuality should only be between a man and a woman, please help us stop Mitt Romney.
As governor, Romney signed Gay Youth Pride Day proclamations, promoted homosexuality in our elementary schools, and unconstitutionally ordered state officials to make Massachusetts America's first same-sex marriage state.
Romney supports open homosexuality in the military, the appointment of homosexual judges, and the ENDA law, making it illegal to fire a man who wears a dress and high heels to work, even if he's your child's teacher.
When you vote tomorrow, please vote for social sanity in Rick Santorum, not for homosexuality in Mitt Romney.
Rick Santorum is the only candidate who can be trusted to uphold traditional marriage.
Not to wear a dress and heels to school.
To have both a mother and a father.
This message paid for by JewsAndChristiansTogether.org and not authorized by any candidate. To get the facts before you vote, visit JewsAndChristiansTogether.org.
And they don't, they're sitting there talking about homosexual marriage and they don't even realize that their organization name initials spell jacked.
Call our 800 number, 1-800-HOT-MAIL.
Hot military studs for you.
Gannon, Cucker? Gosh. Yeah, oh, my God.
Oh.
What is this? What are they doing? Wait, I can't wear a dress to work? What are they talking about? What?
Yeah, that's the... Transgendered people scare the bejesus out of right-wingers for some reason. I mean, you know the current controversy, right? Her name is Jenna Takalova.
No, I'm not. What happened?
Okay, she's a Miss Universe contestant in Canada.
Okay.
And she has known since she was 4 years old, basically since attaining consciousness, that she was in the wrong gender. Her what would the Lakota people have called her?
Two-souled.
Two-souled, exactly. Two-souled. And in that culture, they were special and treasured.
Mm-hmm.
Rubbed out.
And useful on cold nights.
There you go. but no, not and who owns the Miss Universe pageant, Albert?
Probably
guy with the thing on his head.
Yeah, I could see somebody with something on there. Some fox or black squirrel or something.
Yeah, it's a weasel because it's Donald Trump.
Oh, that's that guy. Yeah, that guy.
And Miss Universe will not... Jenna Takalova lied because we've got a box to check off that says, are you a natural-born female? And Jenna Takalova checked it off, but Jenna Takalova was born male. Now, as soon as Jenna Takalova attained consciousness, she realized she was too sold. And so if you can imagine the difficulties of this, and I have a hard time wrapping my mind around it, because of the confusion and pain that it must cause, Jenna Takalova started hormone replacement therapy at the age of 14. Jenna Takalova had full gender reassignment surgery, which is not exactly like going in to get those aforementioned wisdom teeth removed, which is painful enough as it is, at the age of 19. And Donald Trump doesn't want her to compete, but it creates an interesting observation coming in from Onward to Dystopia in the chat room, Albert. Doesn't Jenna Takalova look a lot like Ivanka Trump? Yes, she does, which is probably another part of the problem. But she is beautiful. I mean, beautiful. And Donald doesn't want her to compete in Miss Universe in Canada, but there's a problem in that Canada has these annoying little human rights laws that says that she cannot be prevented. She cannot be discriminated against because of her post-op transgender status. And so it's created a real kerfuffle, and Jenna Takalova has gone out and hired celebrity lawyer Gloria Allred, which is where the trouble starts.
Of course.
Because I guess they had a... they had a press conference in which Ms. Allred noted that no one ever asked to see Donald Trump's genitals, but apparently they want to have a look at Jenna. So this was apparently reported that... it was reported by TMZ, and I guess they've got some sort of a broadcast, Albert.
Okay.
And,
yeah, that's not my thing.
No, nor mine. I don't really go in for all this stuff, but I find it fascinating to see how the right... It's an example of the sexual... Everything is terrifying to these neo-maxi Zoom dweebies.
Seriously.
Everything. Yeah. I mean, they're scared if you're male, you might be gay. They're scared if you're female. Oh, maybe you're a lesbian. Scary. Oh, Jesus, transgendered, what?
Yeah.
And so he called a program of some sort. I don't have all the details. He called into TMZ Live and said, I think Gloria would be very impressed with it. In other words, offering to show Gloria Allred his penis. Because, as I said, Ms. Allred said Jenna Takalova didn't, quote, didn't ask Mr. Trump to prove he's a naturally born man or see photos of his birth or to view his anatomy. It made no difference to her. So now Donald Trump wants to expose himself to Gloria Allred. These people are pathetic. Creepy pathetic. I mean, there's our buddies, Jews and Christians together, not realizing that that spells Jack, fulminating about homosexual marriage. And Donald Trump, zit!
Wow.
Like it's some sort of scene from Boogie Nights. I don't know if the thing on his head's going to show Gloria Allred its as well. That's not fully.
Brother Bob. The guy's, he's scared of windmills. So what do you expect from that guy? You know.
Well, if you had a thing on your head that might get blown away and take your brains with it, you'd be scared of windmills too.
Yeah, that is true. Man, is he just revolting? He wiped Jack right out of my mind.
Yeah, that was so funny too.
Yeah, I was having a great time. You know, I mean, but of course he's got to go totally sleazy. Is this the first time he's been sleazy?
That would be no.
You know, I mean, that's like, you know, give me a break. I don't understand. I don't understand how, what level these people are functioning on.
But the thing is, he's playing with Gloria Allred now, and
he doesn't know the first law of Holes, or thinks that the first law of Holes does not apply to him. And Gloria is just going to sit there, chum in the water, until he says something actionable, and then, you know, the suit papers are probably already waiting with the, you know, just fill in Donald Trump here.
Yeah, as soon as it comes out of his mouth, excuse me.
And on the blank day of April 2012, Donald Trump did offer to expose his penis to Gloria Allred. See Exhibit 3 attached.
Yeah, he's wise. He's so wise. Yeah, it's the...
It's the wisdom that passeth all understanding, isn't it?
It is. He's just an amazing guy. What a great guy. Great American. Yep. God bless him.
Somebody fire up the Lee Greenwood.
Yeah, God. And you know, my mother, she had married in and to this, you know, guy, and part of his family, his sister is now his brother. And they're a little bit of a right-wing kind of whiff in the air over there. And it's an interesting thing, and I'll tell you, you know, from my limited experiences with, you know, knowing transgender people, they're serious. Like, it's not, you know, yo, man, what's up, like, white boy, or, you know, it's not like, you know, somebody just pulling an identity. Like, that's who they are. I mean...
Yes, I mean, that's why you do dangerous things like having very expensive surgery. Because it is intolerable to live in the other way. And I guess the right wing would rather they just commit suicide.
Oh, it's because they're really afraid. You know that. It's like you mentioned something about... oh man, I forgot now. The Donald wiped my mind. But whatever he had said, it conjured up the image of the double wetsuit guy. Remember him?
Oh yes. Yeah. The I believe that was Brother Anderson of Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah, and that's their problem with it. That goes to it.
Well, they can't destroy the closet. Because most of these institutions are giant closets in their own right.
For real.
I mean, what happens to the tamp down, clamp down, sinners in the hands of an angry God, Calvinistic freak show, if everybody gets to be who they are? I mean, what happens if the pastor from Montgomery has an honest conversation about his sexuality and his sexual needs with his spouse, to whom he is committed to be honest for all life and all eternity? What happens if that conversation takes place?
Mm-hmm. Well, God is a God of irony.
And the next thing you know, the paramedics are finding you in the wetsuit.
Then two of them.
Two by two, they entered.
Yeah, everything was two. That guy, two snorkels on, two masks, two woo-woo-woo-woo.
Like I said, two by two.
Yeah,
it says in the good book.
Yeah, well, family here, the Korn family knows what we're talking about. You know.
Oh, we've got a song.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, and Van, go check out the archives, buddy, whiterose.org, and hook them up, too. They could use some help. Right, Van? We need you, buddy. We'll buy you a book. We buy your theory. Rebuilding the dream.
I'm buying it. I am, Van.
Yeah, I mean, hook us up a little bit. We're here. We're battling. We've been doing it since what, 2000 what?
Five.
Yeah, we've been doing this a few years. Come on, Van. Hook it up. You know?
That's a long time to spend with one foot in a bucket, Brother Albert.
Well, thank God you can't afford electricity. You might be in some trouble. An iron would fall in the thing or something. We're doing pretty good. But see, yeah, watch out. You start drilling for oil in Israel. Oh, boy.
Yeah,
you know,
see?
That wouldn't happen to you, even if you did sell out. You know, let's get back to that, Bob. No. Even if you did sell out, you wouldn't sell out. You know, because, you know, Anthony Bourdain could talk smack on Emeril, but all Emeril's doing is, you know, put a little pepper in your pizza. You know what I mean? You couldn't do that. I don't think you could be a Rush Limbaugh.
No, I'd have to have it in my contract that I would get to say hateful things about Roger Ailes.
Yeah, I mean, and in a way, you know how, and you know how.
No, because, no, see, but that's how that deal works. I mean, you know your catch-22. You know what happens in the conversation between Yossarian and Colonel Cathcart. And you know, listen, Yossarian, you don't want to fly anymore? That's okay. All you have to do is like us. All you have to do is like us. You know, hang around with us. Come to the officers' club. Drink with us. Be our pal, Yossarian. Be our pal.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the nature. You know, they don't just know. And that's where it would fall apart. You can't talk about Roger Ailes on Fox. You can't say that Rupert Murdoch looks like those dried fruit sculptures they sell at Southern roadside stands. You can't do that, Bob. You're our pal.
That's right. Then you have
and that's where it falls apart. Like I said, I didn't say I'd take the money. I said I'd answer the phone.
I knew you would. Well, you take a little bit of it. A little bit of a rear act goes a long way, doesn't it?
No kidding.
You know? I mean, you know, Mitt Romney can, you know, oh, I pay so much and my 14%. You know, but I'll tell you what. If you or I hit that Powerball, that Mega Million thing, what is that, $600 million? If we hit that, I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't be crying about the taxes.
Oh,
you crying about it? Come on now, what are you, crazy? $400 million?
No, see, the day that drawing was coming down, Bo Webb and I were driving back from Washington, D.C., and, of course, the conversation came up because we'd stopped to get gas, and the dude in the gas said, have you got your Mega Millions ticket? You know, not because he was trying to hustle a Mega Millions ticket, but because he wanted to make sure we didn't miss out. I mean, it was like missionary work.
Yeah, doing a Christian thing, yeah. He wandered the desert for you.
And so, you know, we did, and we're driving along, and the conversation turns to, what if we win? And we both look at each other and say the same thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Mountaintop removal is over. If I have to buy every coal company in West Virginia, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what,
so neither Bo nor I were thinking, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Nope. Well, if it was me, you'd be talking to the proud new owner of Coal River Mountain and wherever other mountains I wanted.
Yeah.
I'd be buying mountains, and then they'd be like little...
They're not making any more of them.
Yeah, there'd be some real big ostentatious kind of windmills on them. Vertical ones. Colorful ones, all kinds of nice.
Tulips everywhere.
Tulips everywhere. Yeah, I'd plant some. You know, maybe even fund some research and, you know, in ways we could get mycelium to break down all that rock and toxic materials left over from mountaintop removal landfill. You know, mycelium, boy. You know, that's the niche making life organism on this planet. Breaks down minerals and everything into toxic compounds and all kinds of stuff, and it gets life. You know, gets the area ready for life to take hold, you know. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. Well, Paul Stamets, he'd be getting nice big funding, and that, you know, that's what you'd have to do, wouldn't you? You'd have to do it, wouldn't you? Oh, I wouldn't cry about the taxes, Brother Bob.
No, no, no.
No way.
No,
no, no.
No.
It's Sorry. Not happening. I tell you what, as far as I can see, every town that I looked at is going to have, every roof on that town is going to have solar panels on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, $50 million in solar panels.
Yeah, turn around, make this little burg where I live a place that people wanted to live in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and it's, you know, that would be immediate. It wouldn't be.
And the thing is, these things are doable, and I think this is the takeaway on this, Albert. The things that you and I are discussing are doable, and so, you know, here's little working stiff you and working stiff me, and we're talking about this is what we would do if somebody dropped 0.6 billion dollars in our laps. But there are people out there who don't have to wait for someone to drop the 0.6 billion in their laps. That's chump change. That's Jed Clampett walking around money. It can happen, but it is not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the political donor class are into, and I'm not trying to run anybody away with the nasty language or anything, but they are, and it's a very specific term, they are star fuckers.
Mm.
Familiar with the phrase? You know, they'll give $1 million to the Democratic Party, but they, by God, have to have an autograph picture of them standing with Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And so, consequently, money that would do tremendous good in communities around the country instead gets thrown down a toilet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, you have to be the change. You can't, you know. I wouldn't even have, heck, my walls. I would have cob walls, so I don't want to put nails into that. Pull a chunk off the plaster. I don't need no pictures. You know, that's not what I need. I don't want that. I want a nice, clean conscience when I die, that the world is a better place for my kids and their kids and so on and so forth. And
I think that's the real key to that whole afterlife paradise thing. You have to be able to go with a smile on your face.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean,
didn't waste my time.
Didn't waste my time chasing money. Didn't waste my time, you know, worrying about what I was wearing. You know, I mean,
Be careful, because you're sounding a lot like some of that stuff that's in that book those people thump instead of reading, Albert.
I've read that. I've read those words before. Red words. Yeah.
What is it? Consider the lilies. They neither tarry nor neither they tarry neither do they sow. Isn't that?
I'll tell you what. Lilies. I only know them from a gardening perspective. You get them in your yard. They're there. They don't move. Good luck getting them out of there. You know, they're beautiful to look at, Don. I'm sure they'd be hardy enough to maybe look at for mountaintop removal reclaiming. You know, because that's going to be a 50,000-year process. I mean, that's the kinds of things we got to do. We have to do that, those kinds of things, and we all know that. This is prayer. I mean, you know, that's why we don't like these hypocrites. We all know we don't like these hypocrites. You know, and maybe that's why, you know, I don't know, maybe that's why we live the way we do. I don't know, you know. Who knows? Here we are spinning through space, and Mitt Romney still hasn't won his nomination. So, I mean,
Close the deal. Mitt Romney signed Gay Pride Days into law. What?
I mean, yeah.
Come and see us at Jacked.
Oh, man. Jacked for friggin' Rick over here.
The guy who's known as being the frothy mixture is being supported by an organization that doesn't realize its initials spell Jacked. The god of irony is just throwing darts at him.
Yeah.
Hates abortion, but made sure that his wife got one. You know.
Well, it's Handmaid's Tale. You know, thankfully we're not going to have to deal with that. We're just going to have to deal with Mitt and Mittens, Magic Underpants. I mean, that guy he's like Tinder. He's the easiest guy to light up. I mean, President Not Sure should be able to defeat this guy. He better do his training. He better be on his game, and I think he is. I think, you know. And I talked to a friend of mine, and she said, I voted for Ron Paul, you know, to kind of throw a monkey wrench in the system. But, you know, and he is, I mean, out of all of them, he's the guy who's right, you know, at least twice a day. But, you know, still, I mean, it's like, for real, you know, these people, that's the best they got. I don't see it. I don't know. I don't know how President Not Sure doesn't take this. You know, I think he's going to, and, you know, people keep talking about a collapse this and a collapse that and a race war this and a need a gun that. You know, these people, you know, they're so worried and so afraid. And they don't...
Terror, that's the whole thing, Albert. Terror defines their very essence.
Yeah, well, Bob...
I mean, they can't even... Nobody's going to make these fundies watch the Miss Universe pageant. What is it to them... Whether a post-op transsexual competes. That comes from the same places. You know, the greatest threat to traditional marriage is them homosexuals getting married. Not the 50% divorce rate among the straight people. Because if the homos get married, that means I might go to work in a dress and heels someday, and where will I be then now?
Brother Bob, they're projectors from 1930, and the light bulb's going out, and we don't even make them anymore. That's what these people are. The projection is so transparent, it's so obvious, it's so loud, and it's grating. Every word out of their mouth, everything. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to everything they say. And it's non-stop projection. Non-stop. Everything. I wish they had some concepts. You know, it's amazing when you hear one with one. And then they say, well, yeah, but I don't agree with the rest of them. Like, there was that guy that was sitting between Van Jones and the other lady. Even her, the two Republicans on the real time are over here not sounding very Republican compared to the rest of them. You know, I mean, anyone with a brain is kind of...
Well, you want to know how silly the thing with the woman in Canada is? Bill O'Reilly.
Did he call her with a vibrator?
No, and he didn't offer to
loofah. No, falafel.
So he didn't offer to falafel her either. No, he used his airtime to say that not letting her compete sounded stupid to him.
Wow. What?
That feels downright tectonic, doesn't it?
Oh, Bill, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the vibrator and the falafel. I didn't mean that. You know, if you've turned a cheek, I'm willing to accept them. If they start talking sense, I'd love to have a conversation because we need to get things done. You know, we can't go through another 4 years like we just did. This is baloney, bullshit. We can't do it. We're not getting anywhere. We're sitting here trading water, fighting over nonsense. If Bill O'Reilly wants to come to the side of sense, if Pat Robertson wants to come to the side of sense, Jerry Falwell, if he wants to come out of the grave and start talking sense, I'm willing to accept it. And I think as liberals, as someone who embraces that term, we have to. That's the law. That's how we are. That's in our nature. I forgive it. I can forgive them. No problem.
But okay, but once again, for every one step forward, there are two steps back, Albert.
Okay, what happened now? I got too excited.
Yeah, you got a little too excited because this one's going to get kind of close to home.
Well, Pat Robertson's another one too. He says one good thing and then. You know.
And then 92 and 99 insane ones.
Yeah.
I offer Exhibit A, one Cecil Roberts. Now, that may not immediately. You know, we talked about Clive, the loony last night from Australia, from Queensland, who thinks that the Greens and the Rockefeller Foundation and the CIA are out to kill the Australian coal industry? Well, that sounded real crazy, didn't it? And we juxtaposed that against, Don Blankenship, talking about how if you have mass transportation, the next thing you're living nine families to a three bedroom apartment with your bathroom 13 miles away and it's only cold water. I didn't plan this, Albert. Cecil Roberts is the president of the United Mine Workers of America. Probably of all the unions in the United States, the United Mine Workers of America stir more just gut feelings of love and respect for standing up for your rights and demanding to be treated like, because of the dangerous, deadly, toxic brutality of the industry and all of its excesses over the years. Right? You know, it's the March on Blair Mountain and the brave miners and all of that. Well, I said a while back that the United Mine Workers of America are dead to me. And this is the kind of stuff, this is the why of that. So there are, and I'm sure you're proud of them, that the EPA's proposed regulations to limit coal-fired power plants, that came out last week and had a lot of people really excited, you know, because it means that beautiful young men like Albert Jovante Woods won't leave football practice and go home to die.
Yep.
So, somebody asked Cecil Roberts what he thought about that. Yeah, strap in, okay? This is worse than Clive Palmer from Australia with the CIA.
Yay!
And apparently, I'm guessing Cecil must have read that story because he is riffing on it. This is a quote. The story was in The Hill. The Navy SEALs shot Osama bin Laden in Pakistan and Lisa Jackson shot us in Washington. Cecil Roberts, president of the powerful union. No, it's not. It's staggering. It's doddering. he's become one of those house organs for the coal industry itself, where, you know, where gutsy men like John L. Lewis stood up to the coal industry. Poor little Cecil, you know, if he opens his mouth, you can see the puppeteer's hand in the back of his throat. The Navy SEALs shot Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, and Lisa Jackson shot us in Washington. I noticed this past week the Vice President was talking about the campaign, and he mentioned that Osama bin Laden was dead and General Motors was alive. He should have gone on to say that the coal industry is not far behind with respect to what happened to Osama bin Laden. That's a labor leader.
Yikes. What do you say? So self-serving, you know? I don't know how these people get to sleep at night.
Well, yeah, it is self-serving. It's precisely, you went right to the heart of it, Albert. It is self-serving because, you know what? You know what Cecil Roberts wants to protect? Cecil Roberts wants to protect his $400,000 a year job, his swimming pool, and the limousine that comes and picks him up every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could pick up the phone right now and dial two or three different numbers, and there are disabled retired members of the UMWA who will tell you in a heartbeat that the reason they stopped being union miners is because Cecil killed their jobs, not the EPA. Not the government, not regulations, Cecil Roberts. And meanwhile, this comes on the heel of that little story, and it's a non-story, because I can't source it and I can't verify it. It was just one friend talking to me and, you know, about the coal baron on the airplane, screaming into his cell phone so everybody can hear. Of course, he wanted them to hear it, because he wants them to understand that he's a captain of industry. I got 325,000 ton of coal leaving the Mexican West Coast for China, and I don't care what the EPA does here, because I don't need to sell coal in the United States. India and China will buy all that I can dig. Now, who's lying? The coal baron who's making the fortune, or Cecil Roberts who's sitting there trying to work the Neo Maxi Zoom Dweebies into a frenzy.
Yep. Yeah, we all know whose hand that is, don't we?
Sure we do. Sure we do.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, Cecil's not far from slapping a Romney dickhead, whatever the vice presidential nominee is, sticker on the back of his limo. And I think he'd just as well do it. Because you know what? I'm tired of stealth Republicans. I'm tired of stealth right wingers, and he's one of them.
Yep.
I got no time for him anymore.
Yep.
Take the rubber mask off. Admit what the hell you are and move on.
That's right.
Because Cecil Roberts is criticizing the Obama administration for saving the lives of some 12, 14, 16, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 people over the course of what, 5, 10 years?
That's right.
Cecil doesn't like people getting to go on living. I'm glad we're doing this in a conversational format instead of me just covering the story, because I would be screaming F words by now, Albert.
All right. They're trying to bring it out of us, Bob. They really are. They only have pity. You know, they can sell. Go ahead, sell you China. All right, Cecil. Okay, enjoy it. Okay, sell us out. Okay. You know, they'll be drilling holes. That's how I see the universe treating people like that. You know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, you know, I can't wait to see solar panels on every roof. Oh, Cecil.
And the thing is, he is taking a big steaming dump on his union's noble history. A history that Cecil Roberts, by God, didn't help build, but my father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather did.
Mm-hmm.
and he's taking a big steaming dump on them too.
Which takes a
because
big steaming
they, dump. You know, my grandfather sent sons into a war, and one of them didn't come home to save this country. But Cecil Roberts despises this country.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't pee on him if his guts were on fire. Lord, how I despise that man.
Yeah, well, there are some whose waters deserve to be spread among the sands.
And just, you know, one more thing that I thought you might find interesting. Matt Osborne sent this thing along to me from a website called Sightline Daily, sightline.org.
Okay.
A blog post by Eric Duplass titled Thoughts on Seeing My First Coal Train. Now, Eric Duplass is not 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Duplass is a full-grown adult. But the thing is, he's seeing his first coal train because Sightline Daily is news and views for a sustainable Northwest, and he watched as this coal train rolled through Seattle. And he was not, as I understand it, happy. I love the way he thinks, though. He says, I snapped this photo, and he's got the photo on the blog post. I snapped this photo while standing on Seattle's Wall Street, looking west toward the waterfront. Behind the coal train, you can see the Edgewater Hotel. My first thought was, should I stop breathing? Fortunately, coal dust was not visibly blowing off the tops of the coal cars. Unfortunately, however, the lopsided shape of the coal piles suggested that wind and rain had already taken their withdrawals somewhere along the tracks. And so, you know, I read the whole thing and I couldn't resist posting. I just said, welcome to the toxicity of the coal cycle. But it's coming.
Yeah,
and you know
it
what? It's not enough that little hillbilly children are poisoned, that little hillbilly babies are toxified and deformed in the womb. Cecil Roberts wants to make sure that it happens in places in America where it hasn't been heretofore happening, because it'll happen in the Northwest now, too. They'd best gear up. They'd best stiffen their spines, starch up, and get ready to fight, because you know what? The coal industry doesn't care as long as the profits are rolling in.
Yeah, no doubt. I've seen that coal train. That coal train comes through my neck of the woods. I've seen it. So, yeah. I mean, I've seen them before. What are they, 2 miles long?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, hundreds of cars.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, they're dinosaurs, though, Brother Bob.
They are.
And they're squeezing it out. They really are.
And they stomp and they break a lot of crap.
Yeah, they do.
But hopefully they aren't. Well, hopefully they don't have the sticking around power that the dinosaurs had. You know, they were much more successful at living on Earth than we have thus far proved. That's the only thing that scares me. Brother Albert, have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too, Brother Bob.
Talk to you later. Will do.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
I don't know it. What's up?
You?
Trying, Jim. What's happening?
You've gone all over the board tonight, have you not?
You know, there's plenty to work. This was not a field lying fallow. There has been lots to work with tonight.
No, I'm certain. Absolutely. I mean, one search for perfection, one's open election goes on and on and on. And if you're looking for anything in a looking glass world, it's mighty hard to find.
Hear, hear. And, you know, your opening remark about the nature of memory, very, very true, Jim. Very, very true.
Well, it's very true. I mean, you know, if you have a good memory, if it crowns, so does it crucify. And there it is. I mean, you know, it's a two-edged sword. Absolutely. Absolutely. But going back to the initial phases of this program, let me see. You've covered so much tonight, and I'm sort of, at a loss to even address some of the issues.
You know, I try to make notes of things that because I'm trying to create some way, because I don't have it, of going back and figuring what got said when. I'm trying to make notes, being a little more diligent now, of what... And I get to the end of the program, and I can't even make a quality list of the topics that were covered, because it's just sometimes it's sort of it's not even pinball; it's more like pachinko.
Well, you need to have some type of aid memoir, right?
Indeed.
There you go. But I mean, we started off in talking about I think Columbus.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a critter who is certainly he geographied. I mean, how many trips to the New World? Four?
I believe, yeah, four. Well, I think there's some academic dispute. There may have been a fifth, but nobody's sure.
Well, maybe it was. Well, I think his sons went on it, too. But nonetheless, I mean, he went to the Vatican and stole maps from Toscanelli.
I believe his wife's father was a mariner as well, and he may have lifted his charts.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff that was exactly, well, it was on the QT, but nonetheless, if those maps have been right, Tokyo, Japan would be where Nashville, Tennessee is now.
That's the absolute truth.
And, of course,
he's credited with being right about things that everybody already... Yeah, that's one of the myths that this lovely book dispels. Yeah, no, everybody didn't think the world was flat. What everybody thought was that China was a long way away.
Well, I mean, Columbus was so dedicated to his mission that he had found the Asian continent that he even named parts of South America, the mountains there, the Chinese mountains.
Well, and that's why Indians are Indians.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, the Indians there, when they saw these white men coming, I mean, the Aztecs, I know they did this when Cortez ships appeared and they were mounted on horseback, but the Aztecs thought they were the same being and were absolutely astounded to see them dismount. And
when they did dismount, they thought that the horses were giant deer.
Yeah, I mean, they were like centaurs or something like that.
They had nothing with which to compare.
No, they didn't. And for a civilization to have been so advanced in their own ways, but yet bloody as the Aztecs were, nonetheless, they were extremely capable people. And, you know, they were the dominant force in the Mexican Valley and like the Mayans were in Central America. It's just incredible what happened to these people. And they were just decimated, not to mention what happened in Peru by Pizarro, a pig farmer. And the only thing he was interested in was more and more gold to put on the flota to send back to Spain every year.
Fortunately for him, he got his comeuppance because he didn't get to go home. Neither did Balboa.
No, or did Soto either. Buried in the Mississippi River.
The same with Magellan.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him.
He got through the straits there that are named for him, but it was either a mutiny or he got killed in one of the islands.
Yeah, may have. I mean, anybody to sail on those days to the Tierra del Fuego, right around Patagonia, that was not an easy thing to do, that's for sure.
No, because you go through the roaring 40s into the furious 50s, and then, you know, when you get into the screaming 60s, life gets really interesting because, you know, down on that part of the globe, Jim, there's absolutely nothing to slow the winds down, so they just just keep spinning and speeding themselves up.
That's exactly right.
You know, one of the reasons a couple of hundred years later that Captain Bligh's crew got so upset is the damn fool insisted on trying to reach Tahiti by sailing westward around the Horn.
Exactly.
You can't do that. He made like 30 miles progress or 10 miles progress in 30 days.
That movie was on TV last night with Marlon Brando.
I was going to say, the good one or the one with Mel Gibson?
With Marlon Brando.
Yeah, that's the good one.
Yeah, I mean, Mel Gibson, well, that's another story.
Hopkins does a lovely Captain Bligh, but...
Yeah, he does. He absolutely. And, of course, it's amazing what Hollywood can do. It really is. But moving on, going into this thing about Donald Trump and the Miss Universe pageant, what's his problem with that?
Well, the pageant industry is, it's not just hyper-corporatized, it's also very, very right-wingy. Because, I mean, you've seen that awful reality series about little girls being put through the pageant process?
Yes, I have, and it's just absolutely denigrating to any type of human being.
Well, what progressive mommy would do that to her child?
Oh, JonBenet's mother.
Yeah, they weren't progressives, though.
No. Not progressive, but I mean.
But you get my point. You have to have a certain pre-existing mindset to get into the pageant. Universe. And so the organizations that run these things are generally very homophobic and very gender fascist, I think is an appropriate term.
No, I would think so. I mean, I think it's very degrading, absolutely. And for Donald Trump to...
I guess they're afraid that the world will become awash in pageant contestants, in transgendered pageant contestants, and then I don't know, the earth spins off its axis or what? No, what they know is that they will be rejected by the right wingers who actually find these things somehow entertaining. Ultimately, it's a marketing and it's a corporate
Absolutely.
Marketing decision.
I mean, for him to what did he offer to expose himself? Or
yes, he did. Yes, he did. Because in a news conference, Gloria Allred said that Jenna Takalova never asked, because see, they asked to see her birth certificate. They asked to see her genitals. And Gloria Allred factually pointed out that she certainly never asked to see Mr. Trump's.
Well, Gloria Allred will defend anybody against anything like Lloyd to London against except everything except poverty. You know?
Well, there you go. But there, the fact I mean, that, but no, the Donald and the thing on his head replied that they would like to expose his penis to Ms. Allred and thinks that she would really like it.
I don't know about that, Bob. I've seen enough of those in my time, but I can tell you one thing. If the thing between his legs is like the thing on his head, he can keep it in his pants.
Toaster.
I mean, really. I mean, who in the world would want to see his private parts? Not even Howard Stern on the worst of his shows would have him all there.
No. No.
Oh, my God. It's just incredible what's been going on today. Today was cat vaccination day.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
At Shea Gym? I mean, you're not a do-it-yourself vaccinator, are you?
No. But I can remember when I was living in D.C., when I had to take my late cat, Eufor, who stands for unfinanced requirement, to the vet. It was like on a Saturday morning, and God, was I hungover. Jesus, God. And so there must have been 35 people in that waiting room, and every sound in the entire sound spectrum was being heard, from birds to whatever. And so I got into the vets, and so I filled out the application thing or whatever you have to do. And the woman looked at me and said, well, we'll see when we can. And I said, may I ask you a question? And she said, yeah. And I said, there's no place on this form for his religion. And I could hear her talking to the other attendant saying, we got us a problem in here. And she said, well, I'll write it down at the bottom right by your signature. I said, Episcopalian. And I was the next person seen.
Beautiful. Beautiful. You know, I got to put that one on the list right up there next to Tim from L.A.'s the Aquarian McDonald's. Do you accept Hawaiian money?
And when I got in there, the vet came in. And the vet asked me, he said, Mr. So-and-so, exactly, what do you do for a living? I see it's the United States government. And I said, oh, well, if I told you,
I'd have to
kiss you. No, I didn't say that. I just said, if I told you, but I didn't finish the sentence. And I said, just let's get all with the vaccinations and be done with it so I can quit this place and leave you in peace and myself. And so that was just one experience right there as far as, you know, that I just remember.
And so today was cat vaccination.
Yeah. Both of them got their shots and everything like that. And
didn't like it worth a damn, I trust.
Well, Bob, you try to lift a 29-pound cat.
Jesus, Jim.
Yeah, he's part wildcat.
29 pounds?
And solid muscle.
How do they even tie? I mean, that's beyond the typical titration for a cat. The
29 pounds.
Oh.
He's a big boy.
Well, yeah, you've just gotten high praise. David in Tennessee noting, he said, "Oh Lordy, that's a Python skit. One poor man with a sick parrot in the vet's waiting room and 35 cats pissed off about coming vaccinations. What bliss!"
Exactly. But, I mean, nonetheless, I just thought I'd mention that to sort of lighten up the mood of the program. If anybody can identify with having to go to the vets with, you know, one hard type carrier in one hand and one type of, you know, the soft type in the other, you know. And so, but the Shady Lady has been with me for 15 years now.
Wow.
And jumps like a gazelle. But nonetheless, getting back to the situation you were talking about, the Frosty Mixture Santorum.
Yes.
You know, he is.
And his pals over at Jacked.
He's the best friend we ever had.
Right. You know, everybody was saying, well, you know, he lost Wisconsin and he lost Maryland. It's time for him to get out. And I'm going, no, stay in it. Got to be in it for the long haul, Rick. And lo and behold, there was the soundbite this morning. We're going on to Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania didn't just make steel, they made liberty.
Yeah, I hope he stays in there. And, you know, I hope that, you know, God knows, I hope they put him on the ticket. But, I mean, even Ivis this morning was just going on about what a turd he is. And, you know, he doesn't make any bones about anything.
No, he doesn't.
No, I mean, that's one thing about Brother Don. I've got to say one thing for him. He'll just tell it like it is, and he does, and a lot of times people don't want to hear it, so does Albert Stern. But, you know, even he admits what a detriment he is to the Republican ticket. But, hey, you know, Santorum and all his happy warrior or unhappy warrior or whatever, or a misguided person, Jesus, God, he's the best thing that ever happened. You think about it.
He is, and the more he turns people off on Willard Romney, if I was sitting on the war chest over there in Obama land, I'd be funneling a check or two, you know, through the right people to keep Rick going, keep him. Yeah, this is good.
Well, Paul Begala intimated this much on IMS this morning.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Certainly did. I mean, with friends like him, who needs an enemy? And this guy is just, I don't know, he's just determined to drive himself right into the ground.
Well, in that little sound clip from the robocall from Jack, Jim, did you happen to notice the sort of passing reference to, the veiled passing reference to Romney's religion?
Yeah, I did.
One man and one woman. See, that doesn't just apply to gay marriage when you're talking about Mitt Romney. It is also a reference to the fact that Mitt Romney's grandfather fled the United States, went and lived in Mexico because he didn't want to have only one wife. So he left for Mexico taking all of his many wives.
I wonder how many he had.
I don't know the answer to that, but I imagine that Willard's got a bunch of cousins.
I'm sure he does. But, I mean, you know, the rest...
But, well, wait, I mean, when... See, I don't understand that kind of family lineality. When you got one man and he's married to lots of women at the same time, are they all brothers and sisters, or are they half... I mean, how do you... What kind of... That's not math, that's algebra.
No, I can put it even more simply than that. That's just all fucked up. That's what it is to me.
Yep, upside down and sideways.
I mean, God knows if you can handle one woman in your life, that's enough.
See, I will never forget the that trip long ago that Bruce Birch, Wayne, and I took to D.C.
You know, I remember that.
And we were in a cab with and the driver happened to be a Sikh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sikhs and Muslims traditionally do not get along.
No, they do not.
They rather vehemently don't get along. And we were just sitting in the back seat of the cab minding our own business when our cab driver decided to impart some wisdom. And he imparted his wisdom having just gotten off the phone. And a lot of, and you know well, the cabbies in D.C. are always on the phone to somebody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know, we hear his side of the conversation, and it goes something like, yes, dear, no, really, dear, yes, yes, absolutely, yes, I will bring home 2 gallons of milk, yes, yes, and 5 pounds of rice, yes, dear, yes. And the poor man, you know, is battling through the traffic on Wisconsin Avenue at this point in time, and being new to D.C. cab riding, Bruce Wayne and I are just sort of none of us particularly religious, and suddenly finding it at least expedient to try to speak to some deity about our hopes for survival. And the man, the lovely man, hangs up his phone, turns to us, and says, "I will never understand the Muslims. They want to have 4 wives. I can barely control one."
Yeah, you got a point there. Absolutely.
And we came apart in the back seat. Yeah, maybe the problem is that idea of control, because that's a direct quote.
Well, polygamy is something I never quite understood. Of course, monogamy is something I never understood either, but that's just my situation.
Yeah, the only thing I ever understood, I've got 2 wives and it's mighty bigamy.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, David in Tennessee noting, Romney's forebears, that's not math, that's population dynamic statistics.
Well, I mean, you know, Ramses II, how many wives he had? Over, like, 95 or something like that? And, I mean, and had, I don't know how many, but, like, over 100 children?
Go read the Old Testament, Jim. I mean, read about Solomon's wives and David's wives. How do these marriage fascinated freaks just blow by that and talk about it being between one man and one woman?
You got me.
Because, you know, they figure Adam and Eve, and then they completely blow off the side stories that this ancient tradition that came up with all of this literature. They forget Lilith. I mean, she's back there.
Yeah, she's back there, the evil one who tried to, you know, do all these evil things and stuff like that. And, you know, as far as Adam and Eve, I mean, you know, we get into Adam and Steve and stuff like that. And, you know, and
yeah, that's one of those little chestnuts the right wing are so fond of. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Romney is, I don't know, he is the only person that I know who can, in one sentence, contradict himself from the first part to the second part. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he really is an Etch-a-Sketch. I tell you what, I know you appreciate some good writing.
By the way, I want to mention one thing quickly.
Sure, sure, sure.
The book by Rachel Maddow called Drift.
Yes.
Excellent, about the military industrial complex.
I had been planning on reading that.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
No, I got a recommendation from our buddy Reverbo the other day. He shares our common appreciation of great writing. And it's a piece called The Great Romneyverse, Romniverse.
Yes.
It's from the New York Times. I think Paul Krugman recommended it.
Uh-huh.
It's by David Javerbaum, and it's called A Quantum Theory of Mitt Romney. And it's exactly what you said. If you go and look this up, Jim, you will absolutely be, I'll get a link to it and send it along to you. It'll blow you away. He says, the recent remark by Mitt Romney's senior advisor Eric Fehrenstrom that upon clinching the Republican nomination, Mr. Romney could change his political views like an Etch-a-Sketch has already become notorious. The comment seemed all too apt, an apparent admission by a campaign insider of 2 widely held suspicions about Mitt Romney that he is A, utterly devoid of any ideological convictions, and B, filled with aluminum powder. Give you an idea of where he's going. It's very, very good.
Well, I mean, you can't believe a word the man says, because what he says in the first part of this, it contradicts what he ends up before the period, in the last sentence, you know, or the same sentence. I mean, I've never seen a person like that before in my life. I mean, he's such a bundle of contradictions, and if that's the best the Republicans can offer, good luck.
And have fun with all. And, you know, it's at the point where even John McCain is making jokes. I don't know if you caught this or not, but Grandpa Grumpy suggested earlier today that Sarah Palin would make a wonderful running mate.
Oh, absolutely. You know, she's now on, what is it, ABC or something like that. She's taken Katie Couric's place for a while.
Huh?
Yeah, she has. She was on, Katie Couric went to one. I can't keep up with them because, you know, they change positions like, you know, I would change underwear. But nonetheless, I mean, Sarah Palin was on the hosting of some morning talk show.
Oh, merciful God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, she's still there, and she's still going on, and they ask her who she voted for, and her only answer was, anybody except Obama. So even she has her doubts as far as the Republican nominee of who's going to be president and this type thing is concerned. So, I mean, I think they're pretty much just...
Well, you know, she's a fundamentalist. There's no way she can get behind Romney with any kind of enthusiasm. Because he's a member, you know, in her lexicon, he's a member of a cult.
Well, you're right. And in addition to that, what people forget, I mean, she may be a somewhat attractive woman, but she's an idiot. I mean, she's the biggest idiot I've ever seen in my life to gain her own position in the public forum. And, you know, she hasn't learned much over the past 4 years. Ever since she was McCain's running mate, I can't see any appreciable or measurable outcome of learning behavior on her part. I really can't.
No. And by the way, you know, there was some speculation on this program. I think you were listening at the time. Oh, by the way, it's the Today Show.
Right.
Yeah. But remember how we said that Kay Bailey Hutchinson might make a viable vice presidential candidate? She took herself out of the running, Jim.
She what now?
She took herself out of the running because she said that I think it was the Planned Parenthood business. She said it was it's backwards and wrong-headed. And Olympia Snow has done the same thing. So my current odds-on favorite for Romney's vice presidential nominee is Jeb Bush.
Well, I don't know, Bob, but having listened to all of them, you know, it's a confederacy of dunces. It really is. It's just a confederacy of dunces. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are taken in by all this stuff. That's the scary.
Well, they are. And that's, you know, because this is a deliberately manufactured culture in which trying to find out depth and detail is rendered very, very difficult. You know, being a member of the Horn family means that you are actually interested in detail, depth, and background.
Well, the devil is in the details, and that's what you have to do. You have to be specific, and you have to be concrete, and you
right.
have to be exactly, you know.
And the people and the people who tune in to find out who Miss Universe is going to be this year aren't interested in that kind of thing, Jim.
Well, I guess not, but, you know, as far as wearing heels to teach kids the concern, I could never do that. I'd have to wear flats.
You know, I share your opinion on that.
Or spectator pumps or something like that. I mean, what's a big deal?
Well, right, but so the big upset is if a man shows up to teach class in a dress and heels, what happens if he shows up dressed like Jay Gatsby with +4s, knee-high hose, and spectator wingtips? Are we going to say that that's normal? What if he shows up in a frock coat? How about a powdered wig? Oh, wait, we've got an entire sector of society that shows up doing that. Never mind.
I had to wear +4s. Will you believe that?
As a young'un?
Yeah.
Sure. No, I'd believe that in a minute.
Yeah, I sure did. As a matter of fact, I did. I hate him because my father liked them and this, that, and the other, but that's beside the point. And one other final thing. Someone made some kind of comment about Gregorian chants or whatever. Hey, don't knock it if you tried it, because Gregorian chants can be very peaceful.
Oh, I love them. I absolutely do love them. And you know, the guy and the monks who chant live to be like 90, and they die with their brains intact.
They do.
They've got lower blood pressure. And some of that, I think, though, is the cloistered life where you're away from the madding crowd, don't you, Jim?
And the diet and the restrictions and stuff like that. And, you know, their devotion to the clock. I mean, you know, you have to get up at how many times a night you have to get up?
Oh, Jesus. You know, and then it all starts over with what? It's not, matins isn't even the first thing, is it?
Oh, no, no. It's, yeah, I think they probably go to sleep.
Yeah, before that, it's like middle of the nightins.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But nonetheless, there's something to be said for that. But we've gone the whole board here, but I'm going to let you go, and I just wanted to share a couple thoughts with you there as far as Romney. And
well, I'm glad you did, and Jim, have yourself a wonderful evening, and I hope both of your feline family members are okay.
Oh, they're both real pissed off.
You would be too.
They are really pissed off. I can tell you that right now. They're both.
Well, I haven't heard either one of them speaking in the background, so I have a feeling that you may be getting the cold shoulder for a little bit.
Nor would you for quite a while. Okay, take care and have a good night.
All right, you too, Jim. Bye now. And you know, when I talk about multiple wives and all of that stuff, I always go back to the Old Testament. But David in Tennessee reminds me that there's a better modern example. Noting, never mind the Old Testament, you want your complicated marriage business and the consequences thereof? Take a look at Saudi Arabia. There's what, these days, in the way of royal family members? Something like 150 crown princes? That's the result of King Fahd having like 20 wives in 1920? What could go wacky? What could go sideways with that kind of a lineage? Yeah, nothing. Thanks, everybody. What a wonderful show this has been. This is one of those where it's like, hey, where'd the 3 hours go? So I hope you'll join in tomorrow evening as well. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, always, always.